Teach Michael.
My foot, I was out for 65 games. And when I came back, I wanted to play. You know, here in the doctors, they came up with this whole theory that you can only play 7 minutes a game, but I'm practicing 2 hours a day. You know, I'm saying, well, I don't agree with that math, you know. And back then, it was about whoever had the worst record get the most balls and the ping pong balls, and, you know, you can decide what pick you're going to have. But I didn't care about that. I just wanted to win. I wanted to make the playoffs. You know, I wanted to keep that energy going in Chicago. So I had to go in his office and sit down with him. I said, Jerry, you know, I feel like I should play more than 14 minutes. I'm practicing 2 hours. He says, MJ, I think I have to protect the long-term investment that we've invested in you. And I said, Jerry, I really think I should be able to play. He said, let me ask you this. He said, if you had a headache, and, you know, at that time it was about 10% chance that I can re-injure my ankle or my foot. He says, if you have a headache and you got 10 tablets and one of them is coated with cyanide, would you take the Tylenol? And I looked at him, I said, how bad is the headache? Depending on how bad the headache. Jerry looked at me and said, you okay? I guess that's a good answer. You can go back and play. He let me allow to go back and play. And, you know, Jerry provided a lot of different obstacles for me, but at the same time, the guy gave me an opportunity to perform at the highest level in terms of basketball. And the Bulls, the whole Bulls organization, you know, they did a great justice for me and for all my teammates. Believe me, I had a lot of teammates over the 14 years that I played for the Bulls. And, you know, I respected each and every one of them. I just wanted to win, you know, no matter how you look at it. And then along came Doug Collins, who was caught in the whole mix of this, Jerry Krause.
Yeah, Rod from Culver City, California, makes a great point. He says that it's his understanding that the guy that was chosen ahead of Michael Jordan to play on his high school basketball team when Jordan was cut was actually flown in by Michael Jordan at his expense in order to point that out. I mean, Michael is gangster. You may think what motivates him is shallow, but he believes more in himself and understands himself better than many people who claim to believe in a God. Again, Michael Jordan, shallow as it may seem to some people, what motivates him, he is more in tune with what he needs to be the best he can be and reach his potential than many people who claim to know God. Teach Michael.
And Jerry Reinsdorf, and, you know, at the same time, he, you know, when I was trying to play in the summertime, he said, well, you know, you're a part of the organization. The organization said you can't play in the summertime. I said, Doug, you hadn't read the fine print in my contract. In my contract, say I had the love of the game clause. That means I can play anytime I want, any place I want. And Doug looked at me and said, yeah, you're right. You're right. And that's how we became, you know, a little close in terms of Doug Collins and myself. And, you know, Jerry Krause is right there, and Jerry's not here. Obviously, I don't know who invited him. I didn't. But I hope he understands. I hope he understands it goes a long way, and he was a very competitive person. I was a very competitive person. He said organization wins championships. I said, I didn't see organization playing with the flu in Utah. I didn't see him playing with, you know, with the bad ankle. Granted, I think organization put together a team, but at the end of the day, the team's got to go out and play. You know, so in essence, I think the players win the championship.
Damn, Michael Jordan, progressive labor leader.
And the organization has something to do with it, don't get me wrong. But don't try to put the organization above the players, because at the end of the day, the players still got to go out there and perform. Ooh. You guys got to pay us, but I still got to go out and play.
We're listening to the philosophy and teachings of Michael Jordan.
Obviously, you see my kids, you know, Jeffrey, Marcus, Jasmine, I love you guys. I think you guys represent a lot of me, you know, a lot of different personalities. Your mom, you represent them as well. You know, I think that you guys have a heavy burden. I wouldn't want to be you guys if I had to, you know, because of all the expectations that you have to deal with. I mean, look around you. You know, they charge $1,000 tickets for this game, for this whole event. It used to be $200.
Michael is snitching. I love it.
But I paid it. You know, I had no choice. I had a lot of family, a lot of friends I had to bring in. So thank you, Hall of Fame, for raising ticket price, I guess. But you guys, yeah, I love you guys. You guys just don't know. You got a whole host of people supporting you, family, friends, people that you don't know, relatives coming out of the woodworks, you know, no matter how you look at it. But I think we taught you right, your mom and I, and hopefully you can make the right decision when the time comes. My mom, what else can I say, my mom? My mom never stays still. You think I'm busy. She's always on the go. And without her, she's a rock. She's unbelievable. She, right now, she takes over two jobs. She's an unbelievable woman. I mean, if I got anybody that's nagging me each and every day, it is her. And she constantly keeps me focused on the good things about life. You know, how people perceive you, how you respect them. You know, what's good for the kids, what's good for you. You know, how you perceive publicly, second thought, take a pause and think about, you know, things that you do. And that all came from my parents, you know, it came from my mom. And she's still at this stage, and I'm 46 years old, she's still parenting me today. And that's a good thing about that lady. I love her to death.
Peace, Michael.
I love her to death. And I'm going to thank a couple people that you guys probably wouldn't even think that I would thank. Isaiah Thomas, Magic Johnson, George Gervin. Now, they say it was a so-called freeze-out in my rookie season. I wouldn't have never guessed, but you guys gave me the motivation to say, you know what?
Man, I don't know how to convey how important this is. All of these years, and this is what you, and we should teach young people. All of these years of admiring Michael Jordan from the outside in, you never had a chance to really see his, you never had a chance to hear his self-concept. Not what you thought or saw, but how he saw himself. Nothing more revealing than a person's self-concept, how they see themselves. This is what was motivating him the whole time. Now, if you have a young person, how do you take what Michael Jordan is revealing about himself and use it as a teachable moment? I love it. It's not at all what people expected. And the fact that he waited to do this at his Hall of Fame induction speech, it even has upset more people. They wanted some graceful, politically correct speech where he would credit Dean Smith. Get up out of here. Teach, Michael.
Evidently, I haven't proved enough to these guys. I got to prove to them that I deserve what I've gotten on this level. And no matter what people may have said, if it was a rumor, I never took it as truth. But you guys never froze me out because I was just happy to be there, no matter how you look at it. You know, and from that point forward, you know, I wanted to prove to you, Magic, Larry, George, everybody, that I deserve to be on this level as much as anybody else. And I hopefully, over the period of my career, I've done that, without a doubt. You know, even in the Detroit years, we've done that. Pat Riley, I mean, you and I, we go way back. I still remember in Hawaii. You remember in Hawaii where you and I...
This may be the most gangster speech ever. He is calling everyone out. Pat Riley looked so uncomfortable. He didn't know what Michael was going to say.
I was coming in. You were, I guess, leaving. And you decided to stay a couple extra days, but you were in my suite. And they came and they told you you had to get out of my suite. And you slid a note underneath my door. Although you had to move. You did move. You slid a note saying, "I enjoyed the competition. Congratulations. But we will meet again." And I take the heart in that because I think, in all honesty, you are just as competitive as I am, you know, even from a coaching standpoint. And you've challenged me every time I played the Knicks, the Heat, and I don't think you were with the Lakers, but any time I played against you, you had Jordan Stoppers on your team. You had John Starks, who I love. You even had my friend Charles Oakley saying we can't go to lunch, we can't go to dinner because Pat doesn't believe in fraternizing between the two of us. And this guy hit me harder than anybody else in the league, and he was my best friend. Patrick Ewing, we had the same major. We came out the same time, but we couldn't go to lunch. Why is this? You think I'm going to play against Patrick any different than I play against anybody else? No. No. And then you had your little guy who was on your staff who became the Knicks coach after you. Jeff Van Gundy. He said, I conned the players, I befriended them, and then I attacked them on the basketball court. Where did that come from?
Y'all ain't ready for this. The teachings and philosophy of Michael Jordan, the Honorable Michael Jordan.
I just so happen to be a friendly guy. I get along with everybody, but at the same time, when the light comes on, I'm as competitive as anybody you know. You know, so you guys, I must say thank you very much for giving me that motivation that I desperately needed. Phil Jackson is, to me, he's a professional Dean Smith. You know, he challenged me mentally, not just physically. You know, he understood the game, along with Tex Winter. They taught me a lot about the basketball game. Tex being the specialist, you know, I can never please Tex. And I love Tex. Tex is not here, but, you know, I know he's here in spirit. I can remember a game coming off the basketball court, and we were down, I don't know, 5-10 points, and I go off about 25 points, and we come back and win the game. And we're walking off the floor, and Tex look at me and says, you know, there's no I in team. I say, Tex, it's not an I in team, but it's I in win.
Damn, that's gangster. No I in team, but an I in win. I'm playing this whole thing. We got 4 minutes left. Michael Jordan's Hall of Fame induction speech. Exclusively on the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee program. I may be the only one that sees the value of the speech the way I do. Most people are not satisfied with what he did. I love it, Michael.
I think he got my message. I'd do anything to win. You know, if that means we play team format, we win. If that means I have to do whatever I have to do, we're going to win, no matter how you look at it. And then you had all your media naysayers. Oh, scoring champion can't win an NBA title. Well, you know, you're not as good as Magic Johnson. You're not as good as Larry Bird. You're good, but you're not as good as those guys. You know, I had to listen to all this. And that put so much wool in that fire that it kept me each and every day trying to get better as a basketball player. Now, I'm not saying they were wrong. I may have looked at them from a different perspective, you know, but at the same time, as a basketball player, I'm trying to become the best that I can, you know. And for someone like me who achieved a lot in over the time of my career, you look for any kind of messages that people may say or do to get you motivated to play the game of basketball at the highest level, because that is when I feel like I excel at my best. And my last example of that, and the last one that you guys probably have seen, I hate to do it to him, but he's such a nice guy. And when I first met Brian Russell, John and Carl, remember this, I was in Chicago in 1994. I was working out for baseball. They came down for a workout and shoot around. I came over to say hello. And at this time, I had no thoughts of coming back and playing a game of basketball. And Brian Russell came over to me and said, you know what, man, why'd you quit? You know I can guard you. If I ever see you in a pair of shorts, You remember this, John? And so when I did decide to come back in 1995, and then we played Utah in 96, I'm at the center circle, and Brian Russell's sitting next to me, and I look over to Brian. I said, you remember this conversation you made in 1994 about I think I can guard you, I can shut you down, I would love to play against you. Well, you about to get your chance. And believe me, ever since that day, he got his chance. I don't know how succeeding he was, but I think he had his chance. And believe me, I relished on that point. And from this day forward, if I ever see him in shorts, I'm coming at him. I know you guys got to go. I know I've been up here a lot longer than I told my friends I was going to be up here. I cried. I was supposed to get up here and say thank you and walk off, and I didn't even do that. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. As I close, the game of basketball has been everything to me. It's my refuge, my place I've always gone when I needed to find comfort and peace. It's been a source of intense pain and a source of most intense feelings of joy and satisfaction, and one that no one can even imagine. It's been a relationship that has evolved over time and has given me the greatest respect and love for the game. It's provided me with a platform to share my passion with millions in a way I neither expected nor could have imagined in my career. I hope that it's given the millions of people that I've touched the optimism and the desire to achieve their goals through hard work, perseverance, and positive attitude. Although I'm recognized with this tremendous honor of being in the Basketball Hall of Fame, I don't look at this moment as a defining end to my relationship with the game of basketball. It's simply a continuation of something that I started a long time ago. One day you might look up and see me playing the game at 50. Oh, don't laugh. Don't laugh. Never say never. Because limits, like fears, are often just an illusion. Thank you very much. Look forward to it.
Yo, that is that one of the heaviest things. If you dissect that speech, you see so much. Now, he speaks about basketball like some people speak about God. He said it was a place of refuge for him. It gave him pain, but it developed him. I don't know anything about Michael Jordan's spiritual beliefs or, you know, religious beliefs, but he treats the game of basketball like God. Therefore, through the power of his own ability to use that to animate his spirit, he got out of basketball what people expect to get out of religion. I hope that's clear. That's a heavy point. He was dead serious about coming back at 50. People laughed. See, this is why certain athletes can't retire. It's because they really have been worshiping, and their spiritual path and journey in life, they've learned more about themselves and life and gained more power through that particular field of work, line of work. For Floyd Mayweather, it may be boxing. For Michael Jordan, it absolutely was basketball. He lives for and because of boxing. Again, listen to his language. The game of basketball was a god for Michael Jordan, and as a result of him treating it like that, and for him having the gifts that God gave him, he actually became a god. I'll give you another example of how this works. We've touched on this before, a relationship between two people that animates and activates the spirit of God in them, allows them to tap into all of their hidden potential and innate power. Mike Tyson and Customato, I got to play it again. Excuse the language on this, but Mike is talking about his relationship with Customato, and Customato is actually saying that Mike Tyson is keeping him alive because he has to live to see him become a champion. Think of what Michael Jordan just said as you listen to this.
So I went over there and I wanted to box him. He hit me in the stomach. I never felt a feeling. It just felt like I died. He ran the solar plexus. I went down. I just knew I was going to beat this little white man. No way he was going to be. I thought it was a tough guy. He hit me in the solar plexus. I never felt. I just went down. I jumped back up to show I was tough, but I couldn't feel anything. It's my whole blood circuit. Everything stopped. I said, what? I couldn't talk. I couldn't breathe. I don't know what the hell happened. He told me to walk around. Because he didn't want. Because I tried to show that I was tough, but he knew I was hurt. So he said, walk it off. So I walked around. And after we finished boxing, I said, can you teach me some more of that, sir? He told me, you don't want to learn. And he said, everybody said they want to learn. So I had to continue to prove to him that I wanted to learn by conducting my behavior well. I became a nice guy. I talked to people nice. I became a gentleman. And then eventually my grades got better. And then he started teaching me how to box. And once he started teaching me how to box, he realized I was getting close to going parole to go back to Brooklyn. He said, I don't want you to go back to Brooklyn because you're going to get in trouble and get killed or go to jail. I want you to go to this man, this guy could take you to the next level. And at that time, I was probably 1980. I'm at Custom Auto.
You got to score points when you get in. That's it. Score points when you're doing the amateur.
I didn't trust him because I didn't trust anybody but Bobby Stewart at that particular time. And it was like he was transferring me over to another person, and I didn't trust anybody but him. And then he was like giving me to this guy. I said, what the heck is going on here? And I couldn't understand it. But he said, just trust this man. Trust this man.
I don't trust anybody in general. I don't like people to know me at all. And I just recently trust him because the same much I trust him, I guess he trusts me. And he trusts me a lot. So, but no one really knows Mike Tyson. Nobody's really friendly with Mike Tyson.
Who are you?
Except Custom Auto.
Custom Auto would watch me for like, he didn't let me box. He would just talk to me for like 2 or 3 weeks about fighting and the psychology of fighting. And what fighting was truly about. Fighting wasn't nothing physical. It was all spiritual. And he was saying, if you don't have the spiritual warrior in you, you'll never be a good fighter. I don't care how big or strong you are. And he explained that to me.
Your mind is not in your way. Your mind.
Yeah, if I could, if there was one element of this show that was most important, it would be understanding human motivation. I could care less about political ideology. Now, Mike Tyson is telling you he was taught that boxing was spiritual and to treat it like that. He got the results. But listen to how powerful this is.
Mind is not in your way. There's something distracting you.
As time was going on, this guy would just kept saying these he just kept saying these great things about us. This guy, I didn't know if this guy was queer. He just kept saying great things. He said, man, you're a great fighter. He just kept saying, you're the greatest. You do splendid. You look great. You're looking better. He just kept giving me compliments and compliments about everything I did. So what's the role of this guy? I never had the slightest idea. He was just building up my confidence. But as time went on, I understood.
Damn, man. I'm really begging you all to absorb this. Later, for all of, you know, the salacious, slanderous love life of Michael Jordan or Mike Tyson, just look at what it was that made them great in that field and apply it to yourself. Who is the Custom Auto in your life? What is the game of basketball in your life like Michael Jordan? Michael Jordan used people. They didn't even know that they were being used as fuel for his fire. He called them logs. Pat Riley. Isaiah, he named every single person that he used to motivate him. They had nothing to do with it. On the flip side, you have this beautiful relationship between Mike Tyson and Custom Auto, each of them giving each other life in a spiritual relationship, although we would call it sport and play. That by the way, this is why Floyd Mayweather cries at the end of every fight. If you notice that, I think the last 5 fights I've seen, he cries at the end. Why is Floyd Mayweather crying?
What he was doing, as I became an adult, I understood he was building up my confidence. And we started fighting. I had my first amateur fight, and I was so scared in my first amateur fight. I went downstairs and said, I'm going to go to the store. It was in the Bronx, New York. I said, I'm going to the store to my trainer. And I went downstairs, and I said, man, I should get on this training. It's never come back. I wanted to get on the training. It's leave. I was so scared. I didn't want to fight anybody. It's just such a different dynamic than fighting somebody in the ring than it is fighting somebody in the street. And I never thought I could fight somebody. Even after the ring, I was totally intimidated fighting somebody in the ring. But I put myself together with the discipline I learned from Cus, and I went in the ring and I scored a 3rd-round knockout. I don't know, but after the first, it was too nerve-wracking fighting, I thought at first. So I didn't really want to fight, really. So I was staying at Cus' house. You know, I come from a really poverty-stricken area, and when I came to live with Cus, they live in a 14-room Victorian mansion. And I first come here, I said, wow, I could rob these white guys, these white motherfuckers. They ain't hip. Not thinking, I'm not knowing this guy been around the world a bunch of times. I never knew he was like me. He was from a bad neighborhood. He was a street kid like me. And then one day he used to just say, listen, you have the chance to change your life, your family's life. You could be something very special. Don't you want to be champion? You could be champion of the world. And I didn't pay no attention to it. He said, really? You could be champion of the world. You could devastate the world. No man could take what you did. You just got to believe it. I looked at this guy, and then I started thinking. I said, you really? And I said, this guy's really crazy. That's what I said. This guy's crazy. He said, you do what I tell you to do, and if it doesn't work, then you could leave. So I said, okay, bet. So I did everything he told me to do, and I won every championship from the amateur championship. I won all the championships. I'm gonna cry. So I won every championship that he told me, because he told me what to do. And I started believing in this old man. I stopped being a little thief. I used to go back to New York and rob people and then come back upstate and hide out. Then I stopped doing all that. I changed my whole life. I said, I'm gonna stick to this boxing shit.
Master, there you go. Now you got, again. Who's the last guy to stop? Time. Very good, that's
fine. I turned my whole life over to boxing. I turned into a complete animal. I turned into a disciplinarian. This guy had me clean my room. This guy brainwashed me so much that if he told me to bite, I bite. If he told me anything, I was like his dog. He broke me down. He broke me down and rebuilt me. I was just like a total different person.
Mostly just changed my life because he helped me to deal with people. I know how to deal with people now. Before, I couldn't talk to people. I always want to be alone. And now I learned how to deal with anyone. I could talk to anyone, even about their problems. And it's like a father and son relationship. You know, even though he is my manager and trainer, sometimes I forget that because of the way we are. The first day he met me, he took me in his house. He didn't even know me.
I can say honestly, I have a very deep affection for him. I do. To me, he's my boy. He's with me. I often say to him, you know, I owe you a lot, and he doesn't know what I mean, but I'm going to tell him now what I mean. If he weren't here, I probably wouldn't be alive today. The fact that he is here and doing what he's doing, and doing as well as he's doing, and improving as he has, gives me the motivation and interest to stay alive. Because I believe that a person dies when they no longer wants to live. But I have a reason with Mike here, and he gives me the motivation. I will stay alive, and I will watch him become a success. Because I will not leave until that happens.
Ooh, man. Damn. Total submission to an idea, a person, or a pathway. Now, I take, I ain't gonna lie, I haven't been to class in a while, but I used to take Wing Chun. There's things that you can be, your sifu or your teacher can take you beyond your threshold of pain because of your trust and desire to please your master teacher. Michael Jordan, at a certain point, he just started using people. That's how powerful his mind is. Imagine how powerful Michael Jordan's mind would have to be for him to use family members, coaches, high school memories, gambling even. The root, or I would say a key to understanding why Michael Jordan gambled is what you just heard him talk about. Of course, he couldn't put that in his Hall of Fame induction speech. Let me read your comments before I raise up out of here. Woo! Mike Tyson and Custom Model. Roginia, Culver City, California. He says, young brother said, I have read each of those 22 immutable laws of marketing. Yeah, I don't mind promoting other people. You can get something from them that you can't get from me, or I can't give it to you. Get that book, The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. I actually promote that book in my book. But he says, I gotta say, those items were the very best pieces of marketing info I ever read. If I thought that kind of revelation would elude me, should I not keep up with the latest tweets and Facebook pokes, I would get right in line with both of those social network behemoths. Thank you for this, the best thing I've seen in a long time. Yeah, 22 immutable laws of marketing. Very short book. You can read it in like 2 days. Rod also says, thinking of Michael Jordan, analyzing how the Portland owner felt after having drafted Sam Bowie ahead of Michael Jordan was worth $1,000. Watching Jordan win 6 championships was worth $10,000. But listening to Michael Jordan give his Hall of Fame induction speech is priceless. Thanks. Marquise, he makes a good point. Marquise says, I love Michael Jordan, But did Michael's self-centeredness and competitiveness help him find inner peace? The answer is no. I believe Michael is struggling to find inner peace because of the same qualities that made him a great basketball player. There's not enough balance. I'm going to read that again, Marquise. Marquise says, I love Michael Jordan. But did Michael's self-centeredness and competitiveness help him find inner peace? Now, I don't know anybody's domestic life, hardly but my own, but I think that it was interesting that Michael Jordan's wife wasn't there, regardless to whether they are together or not. She obviously had a big role in shaping him, but Michael Jordan gave his wife credit for raising the children. I thought that was great. He mentioned Juanita in relationship to how they taught the children. So he's teaching respect for the mother. Subject for another day. Mike Millions, NYC. He says, peace said, Michael Jordan's speech has just inspired me to take my business, economic, and entrepreneurial skills to the next level. I've been motivated to being a champion. And Rod Guignard says he is absolutely tearing up over the Mike Tyson piece. Brother Vernon from Atlanta. No, this is from Brother Vernon from Columbia, Maryland. This is Brother Vernon from Atlantic City. Brother Vernon from Columbia, Maryland, and I are supposed to get together. I'm sorry, long overdue. He says, peace said, glad to see and hear you back on. Keep doing your thing, Ramadan Mubarak. Thank you, Brother Vernon. Ramadan Kareem. Ron Guignard wants to know if I wanted to talk about the whole Acorn pimp prostitute thing. The Washington, D.C. operation. I saw it. I saw the young lady interviewed on Fox. It was a setup, entrapment. Acorn was entrapped by the right wing. That's pretty gangster. Maybe I'll talk about that in coming weeks. I'll get back to the partisan political stuff soon. A great comment about Raekwon's album. A couple of them I want to read. This comes from Sunez Allah or Sunez Allah. Peace. He says, I see Cuban Links 2 as one of those close to classic, 4.5 out of 5 type of albums. The detail, grimier, more explicit, makes the album like a revisit to the drug dealing that they worked to get out of with One Last Caper, as RZA described the original Cuban Links. While it can't surpass the first one, I thought it had that same energy. Also, with Jay-Z's Blueprint 3 being very commercial, this has an ether album effect on the underground in New York here. Good point. Good point. He's saying that, but I don't want to paraphrase, but Sunez Allah or Sunez Allah is saying Raekwon's album is like the yang to Blueprint 3, Jay-Z's yang. Raekwon is yang. Jay-Z is yang. Great point. The idea of being on top of the game, at least as a best MC, as the manifesto kingpin, is a real metaphor to the claim they are making and winning to me in the rap game as legends. Kiss the Ring, as an example, one of the songs on Raekwon's album. This leads to all that hype of sales, as this is now the model of real hip-hop. I also think that if the sales are more than half, as you mentioned, it also solidifies further the cult that Wu-Tang following has, of which this god is part of, that it can sustain them. Similar to DJ Muggs noting that he always wanted consistency and longevity like Led Zeppelin after all of the most immediate commercial fame, i.e. those 15 minutes. All the songs have such great lyricism, the aforementioned detail, but also the cleverness and the swagger is all there at peace. Sunez or Sunez Allah. Excellent comment. Man, that's going to be, I'm going to have to put that in post show notes. That was such a hot comment. Yeah, Wu-Tang is the closest thing to the Grateful Dead. I heard, what's his name? DMC? I heard Run DMC say, DMC of Run DMC said, he said that, I think he said that Run DMC was like the Beatles in hip hop and Public Enemy was Led Zeppelin. No. Public Enemy is not Led Zeppelin. They don't have that kind of a following. They have great respect. Everybody has reverence for Public Enemy and they love them, but they don't have a live performance following like that. Now, with Wu-Tang, I'm a little torn. I understand what he's saying maybe about Led Zeppelin as a studio band. I don't think Public Enemy gets the regard of the greatest group of all time. I will say this with the analogies. To me, Wu-Tang is like Kiss. Wu-Tang Clan is like Kiss. You have the bigger than life figures. You have the character association. I'll say that much. Wu-Tang Clan is like Kiss. Led Zeppelin, I don't know. Wu-Tang Clan to me is like the Grateful Dead and Kiss mixed together. We could talk about that maybe one day. That might be an interesting show. Is Run DMC like the Beatles? Maybe. They may have the most prolific catalog. Okay. Yeah, Rod Guignard, Culver City, California. He says, powerful doesn't begin to fully explain the crux of these words from Mike Tyson. He says, my own two custom models are my dad and his brother. God rest their souls. I'm just hoping I could scratch the surface of being my son's custom model. Beautiful. Go get you a mentor, some of you young people listening to me. Mentor is very important. I have two chapters in my book that are nothing more than a conversation between my life and business mentor and I talking about business principles. I'm 37. Everybody's trying to make me 38. Thank you, Rod. He says I moved him today beyond my 38 years. It is 37 and a half. Sending any more comments. The other Hall of Fame speech that I thought was powerful, we don't have time to listen to it, was David Robinson. I thought David Robinson did a great job being true to himself as well. Check out that David Robinson Hall of Fame induction speech as well. Maybe we'll play it next week. I didn't have a chance to get to it. Kanye West, Whitney Houston started the program off. I'm not going to rehash my assessment of Whitney on Oprah. But again, Oprah Winfrey and Clive Davis, their agenda is different than the agenda of Bobby and Whitney as it relates to raising their daughter. I'll just leave it at that. Any comments on the piece that we did, the package on African traditional and tribal leaders, the real shot callers on the ground? Yeah, now here's where do I put Raekwon's album? It's similar to where Nas's album was last year. When Nas's album first came out, Untitled, everyone called it classic. As Mike Millions from New York City stated, you have to wait to deem something a classic. Right now, Raekwon is in between that. He's at 4.5 crescents. I think people are in love with this album for reasons that partially have nothing to do with the content or the music. It's because they were ready for an album like this. People have been waiting on this. And as Sunez Allah said, Raekwon is like the perfect antithesis to Jay-Z. But if you just listen to that album, the song placement is excellent up until about track 15. But you can listen to that album straight through. It's wonderful. It's good to hear Ghostface back with Ray. That's phenomenal. I can't call it a classic yet. I call it a very good album. And I don't, you know, I think it was a stroke of genius to call this Only Built for Cuban Links 2, to link it with the first one. Jay-Z made a mistake by calling this album Blueprint 3. By the way, Jay-Z did a nice job of that live show on Friday. Jigga was good on Jay Leno, too. And Rihanna was great. Kanye West, brother, if you ain't built for it, don't go out there trying to be the GOAT. It backfired on Kanye. I didn't play any Taylor Swift music today. I meant to do that. Kanye had to end up apologizing. for doing this.
And the Moon Man for Best Female Video goes to Taylor Swift.
Dreamed about what it would be like to maybe win one of these someday, but I never actually thought that would happen. I sing country music, so thank you so much for giving me a chance to win a VMA award.
Yo, Taylor, I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish, but Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time. One of the best videos of all time.
No, sir, Kanye West. This is how a true general does it. An interruption like no other.
Songwriters, for anything.
Please calm down. The music and everything. I said, I went and bought me an outfit today that costed a lot of money today. You know what I mean? Because I figured that Wu-Tang was going to win. I don't know how y'all see it, but when it comes to the children, Wu-Tang is for the children. We teach the children. You know what I mean? Puffy is good, but Wu-Tang is the best, okay? I want y'all to know that this is ODB and I love you all. Peace.
Thank you, Mr. Right. Is this us?
Love that, brother.
I'm confused now.
It's touching to think about A-Sun Unique ODB because he never acted the way that people saw him. I never got that on a personal level. It was almost like he would go out of his way to show me respect. You can read about that in my my tribute to him that I wrote after I attended the funeral a few years ago. Okay, so I'm going to let Raekwon take us out. A-Sun Jones, this is the song right here. Raekwon has expressed many of my sentiments on this song. Maurice from Philly, Mayweather TKO in the 8th round, he'll win, but his ribs will get touched. The ribs are tender. Floyd Mayweather, 8th round TKO over Juan. I drink urine, Marquez.
Powerful brother, man. He was alive. He was a powerful general. The smell from his breath was Valentine. I think it was the year 89. He stayed the freshest. Polo boots. While he's with them colorful logos. He's coming from Medina, we boost. We up in A&S, slipping and dipping the Bed-Stuy native. He used to beatbox, thousands of listen. Yo, that's before the Wu got on. Him and the large Justin RZA came to the island one morning. Could dance to slow music, out drink any. On the benches while we hitting. He's so loose, he's 5'7", a legend was born. Russell A-Sun Jones, I know him for his braids and lessons.
You are tuned in to The Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Let's toast to the fallen, lost, forgotten. Hey yo, if you hear me, then roll up some.
Stay tuned to the Black Coffee Channel, home of the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program.
Powerful brother, man. He was alive. He was a powerful general. The smell from his breath was Valentine. I think it was the year 89. He stayed the freshest. Polo boots. While he's with them colorful logos. He's coming from Medina, we boost. We up in A&S, slipping and dipping the Bed-Stuy.
Let me read this. This is what Minister Farrakhan said he told Bobby Brown. He says, I was talking to Bobby Brown in Houston. A great performer, he said, brother, I really need your help. Minister Farrakhan says, I pulled him close to me because there was a lot going on and I whispered in his ear, brother, you don't know me. You need a closer relationship with your creator.
Yo, let's toast to the fallen, lost, forgotten. Hey yo, if you hear me, then roll up some broccoli. A-Sun, the heart of a lion, a purified mind. The way he did it with a mic and some wine. I would never forget the days we used to sit back. Days I'd be all up in the crib listening, holding a line. And then yo, I just missed this. And now I understand the meaning of love when I kissed it.
My name is Old Dirty. You know what I'm saying? I don't hide nothing back. I come from a family, man, of poor welfare.
You know what I'm saying? When I came out my mother's womb, I was on welfare. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you gotta keep it real. You know what I mean?
He had a heart of gold, intelligent soul from day one. Loud as the feet, best friend was Mama Cherry, sweet lady, BK baby. She taught Dirty how to cook clean, singing the song Sadie, old school dances in OE. Valentine, the wine we sip while we sat with the OGs. Knowledge of self, good health, the fortunes that came with the game had my brother insane. It's like wealth ain't enough to live for, but if you got love in your heart, just believe in yourself. That was the black man rap, baby Jesus and the black lamb. Few jewelry pieces with his gold fangs, his fam.
Brooklyn,
you know my brother was ill, the first dude to say, yo, keep it real. You're the lover, the father. Father, the hustler, the rap professor. Now he with a law, that's a blessing.
See, it's like, okay, where I come from in my neighborhood, my people know me. You know what I'm saying? See, if I try to come any different, they ain't gonna respect me no more. You know what I'm saying? Because they, you know, people got that thing about themselves. You know, if you come from that neighborhood, you know what I'm saying? You can get out the neighborhood, but you can never take the neighborhood out of the people. You know what I'm saying? But if you try to, like, jump and cross over to the other side, people understand that, and they don't like that. That's why they don't be buying people music. See, we keep it real. We always gonna keep it real. You can't knock what's real, you know what I'm saying? We telling the truth, man.
Stay tuned to the Black Coffee Channel, home of the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Radio program.